Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Pete and I are off on a walk down the old railway track in Wolverhampton. Wonderful sunny day we've chosen today, and the birds are making wonderful backing vocals for everything that we're going to be talking about. So this is going to be episode 13 of our Lao Tzu series, and we're going to be doing chapters 21 and 22. So we're going to follow the normal format where Pete's going to read out the chapter and then we're going to discuss it and see if we can decide what Lao Tzu was trying to say. So here we go then. Here's chapter 21.
The body of the Tao is a mist beyond your eyes. Tao of no body, and yet within it is all creation. Like a seed in the dark and a dim light, and from it comes everything. Root, stem, leaf. Its essence is in everything. Everything is born from this Tao. I say so, and I can prove it. From the beginning of time until now, the Tao is eternal, because it is creation. How do I know the Tao is the root of all being? Because I know this.
Now this one just always makes me laugh. And we were discussing earlier on whether Lao Tzu was just being humorous here, because it's insane. Yeah. I say so. I can prove it.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do I know? Well, because.
Yeah. It's quite, yeah.
Because I know. So Pete, you were saying earlier on that you kind of felt he wrote this with a wry smile.
Yeah.
As you were imagining him sitting down and writing this with a little smile on his face.
He's not generally that humorous. His follower, Chang Tzu, Neil the Great Taoist sage, was very humorous, great sense of humour. Lao Tzu's quite laconic and a bit serious, but that I'm sure is uttered with a bit of a smile, a bit of a cheeky smile.
Yeah, either that or he was really pissed off that day.
Yeah.
I just wanted people to shut up and leave him alone, and just live.
Maybe if somebody was asking him awkward questions and he just thought, "Cos I say so."
Yeah.
In this chapter, I've got the old familiar theme there of attempting to speak about that which one cannot speak.
Oh, it's that old one there.
He finds it endlessly fertile, the sort of futility of that, which is incredibly productive in its futility. So it's not futile. You know, you attempt the futile and find it's not futile, even though you don't, of course, the thing is you don't get out of it what you might be aiming for. There's always some sort of tangential production out of those kind of things, those paradoxical adventures. And he's doing that again, and he's done it quite a few times thus far in the chapters that we've investigated.
Yeah.
He's trying to F the ineffable. And in the following chapter, he does again this thing of coming back to the individual who wants to practice this style of contemplation, with more practical advice to the would-be sage, the seeker, the student of Taoism. So, pretty familiar territory, but again, he's doing this thing, he circles round a little bit, and it's got a bit of a fresh feel to it, and some new metaphors, and
slightly different stance, a different way of looking at it.
We're looking at the jewel from another angle.
Yeah.
So let's just go through it a few bits at a time here, you know. The body of the Tao is a mist beyond your eyes, Tao of nobody, and yet within it all creation. A mist beyond the eyes. Now there's a certain vagueness, indiscernibility, formlessness to the Tao. The minute you start assigning some form to it, you lose the plot. He who speaks does not know. He who knows does not speak. And what he's talking about there is he's encouraging us to resist giving form to the ineffable, to succumbing to the temptation to eff it, you know. And of course, yeah. Of course, to eff it is to kill it, and he's aware of that. I mean, I would just draw the contrast between this idea of the ultimate and the idea of the ultimate, which says that you can paint a picture of it, you know, Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel ceiling, you know, God's this old man with a white beard, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so that temptation was succumbed to there. And it's a tension in all the world's contemplative traditions. But Lao Tzu uses the tension, as I say, the futility, if you engage with it, ceases to be futile and becomes productive, but in a way that you don't expect, or in a non-linear way, which is what's beautiful about it, and which is what's a part of his genius, I would say. So he goes on, and we've got a nice metaphor here, like a seed in the dark and a dim light, and from it comes everything. So creation. So the Tao is transcendent to everything created, to all the things in the world. At the same time, it's immanent within them. So even though it isn't everything, it contains everything. And even though it's transcendent to everything, it's inside everything, it's within everything, it embraces everything. There's again a drawing together of opposites, and the opposites in this case are of the idea of the ultimate being both transcendent and immanent. You know, you've got those two opposites drawn together in the great conjunction of opposites, which of course the Tao is. The Tao embraces all opposites, all contradictions. So we've got this metaphor of a seed, and a seed giving rise to root, stem and leaf. And its essence is in everything. It's like, so what he's doing here, he's like, the Tao is a bit like the seed in this instance. And it's the essence of a seed that becomes the trunk of the tree, and the leaves of the tree, and the fruit on the tree. They all, actually, we now know, this is very prescient, because the DNA is present in the seed, and that DNA is the program for the production of the tree and the leaf. And they, in turn, each cell contains that DNA. And then when the tree produces some more seed, the DNA is carried forward. So it's about an essence, you know. And the Tao is a bit like that. You know, the Tao, he likens it to the seed, but also shows us, by the use of the metaphor of organic plant growth, which he does call upon a few times in the Tao Te Ching, indicating how the Tao is in everything. But of course, what he's also bringing to our attention is the whole process of growth, of organic growth, of the carbon-based cycles of growth and decay, which are life on Earth. So he goes on, everything is born from this Tao. I say so when I can prove it. I'm going to say there's a bit of humour there. And you would think, wouldn't you, that how could anybody prove anything that's just clearly poetic? You know, Lao Tzu is waxing poetic. He's not uttering an argument, particularly, even though there is some kind of logical progression in what he says. It's not really an argument. It's more of a poetic utterance. It's more of a rhapsodic giving forth. And so how could he claim to prove it? Well, maybe he can't, and he's being funny. He's saying, well, you know, you've got to find out for yourself. Maybe Lao Tzu's saying that, oh, I can prove it. He's really saying, in a roundabout way, find out for yourself. But at the same time, he's probably saying, well, I can prove it for myself. His experience, as far as he's concerned, proves it for him, to him. Mm-hmm. himself, his conviction, as you can tell from reading these verses, is pretty implacable. You're not going to dissuade him. He knows what he knows, you know. And just because he can't kind of write it down as a syllogism or as a computer program or an algorithm or a logical progression of ideas with a premise giving rise to a conclusion, acting as a new premise and blah, 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 in a chain of argument, because he can't do that, doesn't make him any the less implacable because of the force of his experience.
Yeah.
You know, the intensity and magnitude and spectacular nature of his experience. So we've got that going on there. But at the same time, you know, there's a bit of... It's a nice bit of ambiguity. He's saying, oh, I say so and I can prove it. Well, maybe you can prove it. If you kind of let Lao Tzu direct you a little bit, if you let him make suggestions to you, then you then went and tested out, that you would feel convinced too. You know, I mean, this is the dilemma of the so-called spiritual teacher. Is that their only way of proving their conviction, which is implacable within them, is to get you to do some stuff that'll recreate within you something similar. So they've then basically, if they really want to do that, which might be a bit foolish, but if they really want to do that, they've got to get you to let them do it. Yeah. You know, they've got to persuade you to try this, that and the other, you know. Whatever it might be, whatever their own particular fucking snake oil might be, you know. So he might be kind of having a bit of fun with that there. Anyway, he goes on, from the beginning of time until now, the Tao is eternal because it is creation. And again, he said that it's the essence of stuff like the DNA in plants. But at the same time, he's now reiterating that it's very dynamic. It's all about process. It's creation. Creation is process. A seed giving rise to a tree, giving rise to more seeds, giving rise to fruit and so on, is ongoing creation. Our own birth, our own conception, birth, life and death is again like this dynamism of creation. And he's bringing that to bear on his description of the Tao again. A sense of the dynamic, the dynamism of it. Right from the beginning of time. And the Tao is a bit like what happened before the Big Bang. Well, nothing, because there was no time for anything to happen in. But that nothingness was a kind of something. You know, so the Tao is that also, that, you know, because that is so ineffable. You know, the pre-Big Bang, so ineffable. Since we haven't even got parameters of space and time with which to say anything about it. And that's the degree of ineffability that Lao Tzu is always trying to attribute to the Tao. How do I know the Tao is at the root of all being? He goes on. And this is perfect. This is the proof. Because I know this. Now, again, you might think what he's saying there is he's just doing his thing. Well, because I fucking say so. You know, I, Lao Tzu, am the truth.
Yeah.
The earliest definition of truth, something that's embodied in a sagacious person. He could be doing that, but actually what he's doing isn't that. This is just wonderful pointing, you know. Because I know this, what does he mean by this? That which he's experiencing right there and then as he speaks, this mandala of experience, ongoing, unfolding, dynamic, this being, this pure being of consciousness in the world, that's what he's pointing to. And when you catch a glimpse of it, when you actually follow the direction of his pointing finger, you see all this stuff that he's on about. You see that there is something that is both immanent and transcendent. It's bigger than everything, but it's contained by everything, embraces everything, animates everything, is the dynamic principle of things, and yet it's both. It is those things, but it's also transcendent to them. That whole kind of paradox, that whole unity of opposites, is something that can be plainly apparent just in one's conscious being, just there, just in that simplicity. This. And that's what he's about in chapter 21. And he follows on with in chapter 22 with, again, practical advice. You notice this rhythm, you know, we get the transcendence, the metaphysics, the attempt to F the ineffable, the philosophical engagement with all the interesting problems that throws up. And
so we're going to have a reading.
And then we get like a switch over to the advice, the practical advice, the instruction as to how to understand what he understands, how to be convinced of that metaphysics and that poetry and that effing of the ineffable.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll read you.
This is chapter 22 we've got here then.
Learn to yield and be soft if you want to survive. Learn to bow and you will stand in your full height. Learn to empty yourself and be filled by the Tao, the way a valley empties itself into a river. Use up all you are, and then you can be made new. Learn to have nothing, and you will have everything. Sages always act like this, and are children of the Tao. Never trying to impress, their being shines forth. Never saying, "This is it." People say what the truth is. Never boasting, they leave the space they can be valued in. And never claiming to be who they are, people can see them. And since they never argue, no one argues with them either. So the ancient ones say, bend and you will rule. Is this a lie? You will find it is true. Be true to yourself, and all will go well with you.
This makes me smile a little bit as well, because be true to yourself. One of those things that's just sprayed around so much. Yeah. It's been kind of like little with little rainbows all flickering around.
Yeah,
the
new age is not so new, is it? Even though there's something very robust, I think, about Lao Tzu. I mean, he's a poet. He's a great mystic and a great poet and a great contemplative.
Yeah, but it's quite a lot in this one.
But he's very solid, you know. But the generality of it, though, is it's the advice. It's the way to be. If you're going to understand the stuff that he's tantalised us with in the previous chapter. And as I say, this is a dialectic that seems to permeate the entire book. So what is he advising? Again, his advice is very light touch. You know, this is very characteristic of Lao Tzu. There's a wonderful subtlety and in the way that he teaches us this stuff, you know, and as he shows us what to do. And he likes to say it's not very much, it's non-doing. And of course, that's kind of something that you can find in a lot of the great contemplative traditions. I think we've got in there, it's called apophasis, which is kind of like lessening, rather than gaining more, rather than cultivating, rather than getting more and more fine characteristics. You're kind of dropping, sloughing off more and more shit.
Yeah.
You know, becoming more and more simple in a sense.
Yeah.
And of course, it's something that you don't do necessarily in any kind of violent way. In fact, you know, he's straight to the point. Learn to yield and be soft if you want to survive. And this got took up by the Taoist martial arts, by the Tai Chi and so forth. And you see it in Aikido. The whole idea that combat or struggle or war or any kind of conflictual engagement with others, whether you're talking about people, individual people, or armies and states and cultural trends, whatever. But it doesn't have to be purely aggressive, purely yang, purely violent. You know, there's a way of yielding. Step out of the way. Somebody charges at you, step out of the way. And they trip over themselves and it's all over. And you get away, you run off. Or you can stand there and do the old cage fighting thingy, you know, and just kind of trade blows, you know, and see who can hit the hardest and all the rest of it. You know, so this did come through into the martial arts and into military strategy. The idea of sidestepping, slipping, yielding, being soft, you know. As a strategy, as he says, if you want to survive.
Yeah.
Do this if you want to survive.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of sense in it. You know, there are some forces, if you go toe-to-toe with them, you won't survive. Because the world is full of immense forces that even the most powerful and strong individual will not be able to go toe-to-toe with. But that individual can still survive. They might even win in a struggle. By being yielding, by getting out the way. Just slip to the side, just stick your foot out, the guy trips over it. You know, and then you can run off. So it's very practical, it's very practical and strategic. But he's also talking about our inner struggles as well. You can kind of go, there's a way of going with what's going on inside yourself. It's going with the flow, you know, again, he's getting new agey in California. He's recommending going with the flow. And this is the same thing, learn to bow and you'll stand in your full height. There's nothing wrong with bowing, because what does a bow do? It says that you're not going to assert, right from the offset, some kind of superiority of strength or power or height or physique or anything like that. You're just quite happy to be neutral. You're quite happy to engage with somebody else without a power dynamic. And there's a lot to be said for that. You actually learn a lot more and you have a lot more fun, to be honest with you. If everything's a power dynamic, if you're always trying to prevail as the most powerful in any situation, it's pretty miserable. I wouldn't bother, you know. Just get it onto some much more neutral ground, and then there's some great exchange can take place. Learn to empty yourself and be filled by the Tao, the way a valley empties itself into a river. This is the pure contemplative method of Taoism. It's almost a non-method. You just let it all go, you know, and then the universe flows in like a river. That's what you do. Use up all you are, and then you can be made anew. Again, he's recommending not being sort of parsimonious with your expression and your energy. You know, you can use it up, you can be tired, because you'll renew. You can, in other words, you can be creative at full tilt. Again, that's one of the contemplative no-method methods of Lao Tzu. Learn to have nothing and you'll have everything. Again, you know, he's pointing out, as he does frequently, but sort of grasping for everything becomes a kind of poverty. Yeah. And he's a minimalist, certainly. He recommends a minimal way of living, being happy with the small beauties, which turn out to be very great beauties. And sages always act like this. They are children of the Tao. And he's one of these people who loves simplicity, and he loves the simplicity of the child. You've got this in quite a few places, you know. One of the most interesting thinkers to elaborate this theme of the child, of course, is Nietzsche. And I think maybe we might do a podcast on that if we haven't already.
Yeah, that would be good.
About the child in Nietzsche.
Yeah, that would be very good.
But he saw that there was a cognitive mode in which... what did he say? You know, that you had the simplicity and innocence of a child at play. But Nietzsche's thing, there was a kind of like a second innocence in which one had become acquainted with the world through all the normal processes of growing up, and was wise to the world. But then you somehow could kind of drop that. You could still kind of avail yourself of it practically. At the same time, there was a kind of freshness and openness and receptivity to what's going on around, which allows you to see this, you know. He's really talking about. When in the previous chapter, Lao Tzu saying, how do I know this? Because of this. Because he's just in this kind of simple embrace of his conscious being. Everything you need to know is in there, and nature is alert to that. Because there's a receptivity that comes with that return to your second innocence. And that enables you to know stuff. And he carries on, he's putting forward a case for like a kind of modesty and not making a big clatter, never try to impress. If you don't try to impress, your being shines forth. And this is true, you can see this in some people. Never say this is it. And though he just did. And people see what the truth is when you don't do that. Again, this points to his method, which is pointing and not asserting and not declaiming. It just points, because that's all you can do with the ineffable. And there's a wisdom in understanding that. Never boasting, never claiming anything about yourself, really. If you want to be a sage, just forget all that shit. And this whole kind of embracing of simplicity, of a second innocence, of a childlikeness, of a receptivity to what is going on inside you and around you, is the method, is the Taoist contemplative method. And almost as a consequence of that is that all the urgency to boast and declaim and to get yourself a nice place on the stage or on the pedestal just drops away. It's not important. It doesn't have any importance. It's, in a sense, it's thrown into relief by the beauty that's revealed in that simplicity of being. Then all the kind of clamour of the world and struggle for position and all the rest of it becomes, sort of looks a bit kind of silly and a bit ugly. And so you don't bother. Is this a lie? You will find it is true. Be true to yourself and all will go with you. Of course, what is being true to yourself? What is being true to yourself?
Well, yeah, that's a sticky question, that, really.
Yeah, it is. And we could perhaps run with that under a slightly different heading from
yes.
a slightly different angle.
Well,
the
yeah.
top. Anyway, I think that's what I've got to say about those two.
Okay. Well, I hope that was useful and interesting to everybody. And we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening.